As you know, we've partnered with Bitbox, makers of the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. It's a secure, open source, Bitcoin-only hardware wallet with the best user experience in the industry. I personally use it to guarantee that I'll always have access to some of my Bitcoin in cold storage whenever I travel. If you want to check out a Bitbox O2, you can use the promo code HIGHHASHRATE to get 5% off your purchase or go to bitbox.swiss/HIGHHASHRATE. All one word, no spaces. Check them out.
Ah, screw it. Here we go.
Now, Taoism is sort of simultaneously the study of the Tao and then what happens from studying it. It's the thing that happens to you as a result of looking at it. And Bitcoin is simultaneously this, you know, monetary technology. And it's also this thing that will change you as a result of thinking about this monetary technology.
Hey, everybody. This is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps. Yeah, welcome back to High Hash Rate. Today we're here with Scott Deedles. Scott is the CEO of Block Rewards. He's the host of the Block Rewards podcast. And it looks like you've also, Lantern Bitcoin. And I see some links there. So like, Scott, what's going on, man? What's new?
What's going on, fellas? Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here. Lantern Bitcoin is just like, before Block Rewards happened, I had this idea. The company was originally going to be called Lantern Bitcoin. And that's it. I kept the handle afterwards. So,
is there any significance there? Like, other than that, like the lantern, does it symbolize something for you?
You know, kind of retroactively, I think it makes sense for the book because lanterns are sort of like this, ancient technology for illumination. It's an old way of lighting things up. And this is sort of the same concept as Tao Bitcoin, which is thinking about old ideas to understand, the happenings of today.
Yeah, what per se is Tao Bitcoin?
My new book came.
Came out with the new book.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. So my new book's called Tao Bitcoin: Towards a Cosmology of Energy Money, and it is. Now, Bitcoiners, they love to connect different subjects, theoretically unrelated things, to Bitcoin. If you think about Bitcoin long enough, I think you're going to eventually think about Bitcoin as it relates to something else or everything else eventually. And there's Bitcoin in the Bible, there's Bitcoin, and there's Bitcoin for left-wingers, Bitcoin for right-wingers. And this is my own thing. I have a long, lifelong pursuit of studying and practicing Taoism, and so I've been thinking about the connection between Bitcoin and Taoism basically as long as I've been thinking about Bitcoin. And I had been thinking about the book for a long time, honestly, and what triggered the actual writing of the book was when software blew up. And this is it's not at all a position on the book software, but software. There's a principle in Taoism that sort of says, holds the idea that the easiest way to die in battle is picking up a weapon. And what it means is kind of like when you think about things aggressively or you put an energy into, if you want to make something a military concept, you're going to attract more of that back to you. Mm-hmm. And so my reaction to the popularity of that book was basically something that really got me thinking about wanting to write my book, because an entry point into Taoist ideas would be, if you want governments to start thinking about Bitcoin like it's a weapon, start talking and engaging in that kind of conversation.
All right, let's table that one for now, because I do definitely want to get into that. And thanks for letting us know what your book is. We'll get into that as well. Thanks for bringing it up right away, Mike. But to get it a little bit about your background and get to know a little bit about who you are first, right? So it kind of goes into this, I think, of what you were alluding to is when you're learning about somebody, you're trying to see like what their context is, what their background is, like what they're about, right? Because that can inform you know, the communication you're having. So to get into your background, you mentioned Taoism. How long have you been studying that? What attracted you to that? Did you grow up, you know, in Canton? Were you at in Kelowna, Canada? Was that a big thing in your community, or did you discover it later in life?
Yeah, later on. I'm Canadian. I was introduced to Taoism originally about 25 years ago. I think I've said 20, and I just constantly forgetting how old I actually am. I'm a basketball player. I was playing university basketball, and was first given a book called The Tao of the Jump Shot, which is a book about using Taoist ideas to perform better at sports, basketball specifically. Could work for any sport. Didn't help me very much, but it was a really interesting concept, and it just was something I just clicked on right away. And later on, it was just sort of something that stuck with me. I'm not a monk. I'm not a philosopher. I have spent most of my career working in the traditional financial world. So I got into Bitcoin, I think like most people do. The people that really introduced me to the ideas and got my orange pill happening were people like Greg Foss and James Lavish and Larry Lepard. And it was sort of the debt crisis, currency debasement stuff.
The stuff so, you knew. You're the financial guy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I wasn't immediately thinking about Taoism. I was thinking about, you know, like a lot of people, first this kind of realization that Bitcoin is like the super legit solution to a problem that most people just can't even put their finger on exactly what it is, but we all understand that it's happening.
Right.
Yeah. And
I just gotta ask, what parts of the financial system did you touch?
Pensions, mostly.
Okay.
Yeah. So my orange pill moment happened in during the COVID lockdown in 2020. And in Canada, we just went crazy up here printing money. Like it was wild. And so I was, you know, first thinking about, you know, like normie background, what is all this money printing going to mean for the bond portfolios inside all the pensions I'm managing? And I didn't have an answer. Started reading a bunch of like economics books. Like a lot of people, you know, Canada like totally locked down, right? Like you weren't allowed to walk down the street with somebody who you didn't live in the same house with. And it was wild. So I started, you know, sort of spent the first 2 weeks of lockdown watching Netflix, and then was like, I ordered a bunch of economics textbooks from my local library and spent the next few weeks reading. And eventually I read Price of Tomorrow by Jeff Booth.
Eh.
And that was just like blew my noodle. So then, you know, I was like originally just wondering, you know, like what are we going to do about inflation for the pensions? And then it was like, oh, actually we need to stop selling pensions entirely and just get people to buy Bitcoin. And three or four days later, here I am.
Yeah. So it's when you're working with pensions, right? So it's fair to say that it's very distinct from a hedge fund manager or a trader, right? You are thinking in preserving capital, preserving value, growing that over long periods of time sustainably, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's very difficult to do when everybody in the economy, it starts from the central banks, the states, everybody, the politicians, the media, everybody is thinking about the world and trying to solve for things very short term. It's all very short term thinking, and you're trying to preserve wealth and maintain value for, you know, pensions are huge, right? For people for decades. And this is just not compatible. Like what is going on today in society and how they run the economy, how they run banking, interest rates, it's not compatible with you doing your job with any real success over any long period of time, right? Like you are going to be stressed to that you're working 80 hours a week just to keep up.
It's a problem without a solution. So the pension problem is multifaceted. It's a ticking time bomb that affects a ton of people. Like a lot of people, their only retirement plan would be their pension, right? And, or whatever social security, public programs might tap into on top of it. But you know, on top of that, the bedrock of pension portfolio construction is commonly tied to the 60-40 portfolio, which sort of died a quiet death a couple of years ago. Pensions have had to get riskier and riskier with the kinds of investments they're making just to try and keep ahead of inflation, because they also have the problem of indexing benefits, right? So if people's pensions are based on, you know, their last 5 years of what they made, or their salaries have to go up because of inflation, that's going to change the calculations on the payouts that are going to happen. So it's really quite a systemic problem. I don't see a good out for it.
I think that what you're seeing, what you're experiencing in that world is very similar to what a lot of people are experiencing, whether it's maybe they're not managing money, but they're, like I said, like they're trying to think long-term and they can barely survive today. And it makes you start to wonder about, you know, kind of everything. It makes you start to rethink everything. And you go back and you start looking to ancient wisdom or ways of thinking about the world, religions, whatever, that have been on for a very, very long time. And they've gone through these cycles and they've sustained, they've become stronger. And it sounds like you found a lot of value in the Tao. So before we go in further in that, can you just briefly explain what Taoism is? Who is the Tao? What is the Tao? What does this mean? How is this different than Buddhism? You said you're not a monk. Can you just kind of catch us up here a little bit?
Yeah, the 50,000 foot view, Taoism is sort of a philosophy, overlap of philosophy of religion. I wouldn't qualify it as a religion per se, but that might offend people. If you're offended, I'm sorry.
We talk about that a lot on this podcast. You can use it.
All right, cool. So originates from ancient China, sort of the original manuscript of the foundation of Taoist ideas is something as a text called the Tao Te Ching, which is a series of 81 short verses that are just kind of passed down. And there was subsequent other sort of core texts. So it's not like Christianity where there's the Bible and that's it. There was thinkers that came afterwards and contributed to it. But basically, the foundation of Taoism is rooted in this one manuscript, the Tao Te Ching, and it's the idea is that Taoism is that the universe is kind of governed by a central power that is a neutral force, and this is the thing called the Tao. It is, you know. If you're a Star Wars fan, this is kind of like probably where that lifted that idea to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of this understanding that an underlying energy connects everything, creates everything, and is responsible for a natural, the way our world exists, all of the processes that occur naturally, rain, seasons, everything comes from this energetic force connecting literally as every aspect of everything. And so that's one part of it. And the second part of it is the study of sort of how to interact with that energetic force and live your life in harmony with it. So Taoism sort of has these two core parts of it that is like the subject and the whole. It's the thing, which is this energy, and then it's the thinking about and practicing being in relationship with this energy.
Interesting. So
yeah,
that I think that's a great explanation. And it's when it comes, you said there's multiple ancient texts, right? Like, so you think of Western religions and you've got churches and these communities and you've got the congregations and they go every Sunday and they have these hymns and all these rituals and all of these memes, essentially, like stories and how they talk about it. What is there an equivalent to that in Tao? It seems to me like a very individual journey, but is there a community or a collective aspect to it as well? Like, do they benefit from that in any way, or have you been able to do that?
I think it is more a personal practice. You know, like there are Taoist temples, but this is something that is sort of personal and internal. And I think like to the Christianity comparison, a good way to think about the difference, I think, is that the Christianity is like a it's sort of like a crystallized idea about rigid things. So that's the right. Ten Commandments are sort of like 10 rules that don't change and you don't do these things. Whereas the Tao Te Ching is these 81 verses, and they're just more like things that will get you thinking about things. Like, so they don't tell you to do anything. They're all sort of like a doorway in their own way to open your mind to a certain way of thinking or a certain state of being.
Okay, so that's
can, like, I think can I just point out that can I just point out just make me think like religion. I know Dan's so frustrated when I do this. It's like Christianity is like this religion for the masses, and Taoism seems like a religion for the self. Is that right?
Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it, for sure. And I wouldn't say like, I don't think anything, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily that one would be better than the other, but that is a good way of thinking about the difference,
yeah.
For sure.
No, I think I would say kind of the same thing. I don't think one is necessarily better than the other. My one defense, I guess, or the way I think about, because growing up in a Christian household and being very frustrated and kind of really rejecting most of that, when I got to be an adult, was all about the rigid set of like, these are the laws, these are the rules, you got to follow them, and that's it. But I think I've come back to it and thinking about it, almost to me anyway, now looking at those rigid examples as kind of a way, maybe a different way for like what you're doing in Taoism of getting you to think about things. So it's like, why have these Ten Commandments been so important for thousands of years? It seems like they would have grown outdated by now, but they didn't. So maybe it's about looking at those commandments and kind of putting it in the context of your life today and thinking about how that would relate, and it starts to get you thinking deeper about, you know, ways people try to stay in harmony with the world around them by following a plan, right? But
yeah,
the Tao is more of a, you can take a much deep, it's easier to find that individual journey, and you don't have as much peer pressure, it seems like. Where in Christianity, there's all this peer pressure. If they don't understand the 10 rules the same way you do, they're going to cancel you, or they're going to shame you, or they're going to give you guilt. And that's really probably not, maybe it is effective in certain cases, but it's not for me. I think I'd rather go down the journey myself and kind of dig my own rabbit hole at my own pace.
Yeah, it's kind of like the difference between sort of a carrot and a stick approach, where in Taoism, it's like, if you can, you know, create your life in a way that resonates with this energy, you're going to experience positive benefits.
Yeah.
Whereas it's...
You're going to get positive feedback.
Totally.
Right. And you're going to know that you're doing the right thing, because it's going to make itself self-evident, like inherent, like based on it's a clearer path. It's a more enjoyable path. Like,
yeah,
I'm not depressed when I do this, or I feel less like struggle when I do this.
Yeah. And so this is the thing, is like, there are a bunch of different entry points into Bitcoin and Taoism, but like, this is such a good example of one, because Bitcoin is a consensual voluntary system that is something that benefits everyone who, you know, aligns to it. And you could look at it the other way with breaking rules, but it's easy to see that there's an energy around Bitcoin that attracts people by nature, because the end result of interacting with it is positivity.
Now, one of the things that we talk about in the show a lot, I mean, it's high hash rate, we're all smoked right now, but like, maybe if you get really, really high, some people get uncomfortable, or maybe if you take mushrooms, like, it's a great experience if you can deal with the anxiety, but it comes in waves, right? Like, maybe mushrooms, a really good mushroom trip can be really fun and then scary, and then like it just changes. But if you have experience with it and you kind of get the hang of it, you can start to go with the flow, and you can start to like get in harmony with your emotions and what you're thinking about and your context and your environment. Have you ever had an experience like that? And has Taoism like kind of informed how you handle that psychedelic journey?
That's great. I don't know if I've thought about it. Maybe, I mean, so what I think when you get to a point of studying and understanding Taoism, it's almost like when you get to a point of understanding Bitcoin, where it becomes reflexive and automatic. You don't need to think about it.
Right.
So I get, it would be fair to say I've had a lot of those experiences, because I sort of practice this stuff without any effort all the time. And as far as like psychedelics, man, I think like, yeah, the you know, what you're talking about there, the different like stages of a drug trip, right? Where there may be some anxiety and, you know, psychedelic trips are like, they're the same as what happens for a trip. Trips happen in life all the time. It's just that like, you know, a psychedelic compresses it down into a matter of hours instead of maybe months or years or however long it takes you to experience something. So it can be a lot more profound, right? And I think that that idea is kind of what really triggered my idea around species level spiritual awakening, which is this, you know, an orange pill is something that happens to somebody and, you know, it unfolds over a longer period of time than a drug trip, but less of a period of time than like, I don't know, puberty. So somewhere in the middle is the time it takes you to figure this thing out. And during that time, you start thinking about the world differently and then you start acting differently. So it's something that happens to you first internally. And then as a result of changing your inner world, you start changing the way you present out of the world and interact with other people, the decisions you make with how you spend your money and how you spend your time, like your goals and the things you're working towards. Like it's an internal change that will change your external life. And then
you can't fake that.
You can't. And what you'll find is other Bitcoiners are doing the same thing. So this process is like already totally underway. And it's just really difficult to observe because there still aren't a ton of us in the grand scheme of things, right? But there are people all over the world having this same realization simultaneously, and it's unfolding, and lots of people are changing their world, and more people are doing it all the time. And so it's like, at a species level, we're on a trip too. So why wouldn't there be a climax event where there's some sort of like threshold moment where humanity, instead of individual consciousness, like the collective consciousness has this big aha. And everyone's like, oh shit, we can totally do money in an entirely different way. And all of the things we base our hopes and goals and dreams on is a money system that is nonsensical and like, just doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
And like, what's that going to be like?
So I really like the, just the phenomenon you painted here. And, there's this like meme or this joke there's at one point you were, you know, if you grew up like on a city block where you're hanging out with all your close friends on the city block and you stay out till the streetlights come on. And there was one day where you were all together playing for the last time. And none of you knew at that moment that that was the last day. And maybe you look back and you can't even remember which day that was. Do you think that aha moment, that climax that you're talking about, do you think that we're actually ever going to know that the day that it happens? Or do you think we're going to look back after a while and be like, wow, maybe it was that summer or that year or that financial crisis. It was just, it happened then and we didn't notice it. And now we realize we're here.
I don't know, man. That's a really interesting, like, million-dollar question. I wonder if you're right, and we might not know while it's happening. And that's something that happens to psychedelics too, right? Where you're like, oh my god, nothing's happening. And you're like, oh my god, that was it.
The last thing I was going to say was that I asked you at the beginning, is lantern, you know, is that a symbol of anything? And you said, in hindsight, kind of. I think that maybe that. Based on what you said, it seems like a symbol for whatever that is that changes in you, that makes your life more productive, makes you more on track, on target, and just improves your life, adds value to your life and to others around you. It's like it's noticeable. It's like a lantern in the dark. People are just like, something's going on here with energy, and it's more efficient and it's bright. And I'm going to go see what's going on over here. And I think people see that. I think that's the best way to orange people, pill people, honestly, is just to live a life that's an example. And then they're attracted to it. But,
you know, even that idea is like in alignment with Taoist concepts. You just be it. It's not about going to church and singing hymns or like, it's just a certain way of being. And that way of being is, like, it's perceptible. Other people can totally observe it.
So something that you made me think about back there, you said this term, I mean, you've been practicing Taoism, you said, for 20 years, you said, right? Something like this?
Yeah.
So you said you practice this without, like, with minimal effort or without any effort at all. But the key term is, like, you practice it. So you are, there is an effort in, you know, put forth, right?
Yeah.
And I think you're practicing it with a max amount of effort, but over a longer time frame. You know what I mean? Like, I think that the concept of it is...
Like, does it have a difficulty probably, adjustment?
Well, was it pretty difficult for you in the beginning, as difficult it is to practice now?
Yeah, no, totally, no. And this or kind of thing is like...
I assume, yes, sorry. Go ahead, sorry.
No. I couldn't do it at all when I was young. And it's something that... In Taoists call this concept Wu Wei. It's a concept of principle of non-action. So it's sort of the idea of, like, it's not about doing nothing. It's about being, you know, if this energetic force could be thought of as a stream, like, you just want to get yourself rowing with the stream using as minimal effort as required, instead of, like, rowing the opposite direction against the water. And it's an inherently elusive state, because as soon as you know, if you think about driving a car, you can hold the wheel really tightly or not tightly enough. Like, the second you're holding the wheel too tightly, you're oversteering, right? And that's kind of what life is, right? It's like, so the practicing part of it is actually practicing doing nothing. It's practicing not overthinking about it, not over trying, like, you know, not trying to force events out of their natural order of happening. Like, things are going to happen at the rate that they're meant to happen.
Bitcoin terms, you are balancing the grid of your soul.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and like in Bitcoin terms, there's a really beautiful thing about forcing yourself to conform to Bitcoin's clock. So there is nothing you can do to speed up the confirmation of a transaction on the base chain. That's it. Like, you're just a subject to that transaction will confirm when it confirms. And
just like everybody else.
Right. So you have to let go. You've agreed, as part of participating in this network, to let go of your ability to influence something immediately. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I think even Bitcoiners struggle with. And these are, like, Taoist kind of observations I have watching people. Another, I think, example of this that's good is people's constant need to talk about the urgency of what Bitcoin needs to do now. And that's, like, it could be whatever Shinobi was talking about, Bitcoin needs to scale. And Marty Bent was talking today about Bitcoin mining pools need to diversify now. And I think that it's just... Again, Taoism isn't about telling anybody what to do. There are ways to think about and observe things. And so I have noticed this weird, we have a need to sort of manage our own, like, state of urgency, even while in Bitcoin. We're constantly thinking about things in an urgent sense, even though it's probably not urgent. It's probably just important. Are there just things that we should be thinking about? This is that concept of, like, how hard are you holding onto the steering wheel?
Well, to me, I would say the urgency also comes from an increased supply of fiat, and it, you know, that time starts to disappear right in front of you, you know, and you're working harder for this money that just keeps on being created. So, I don't know where I was going.
No, you're right. You're right. There is this sense of urgency, but
that's what I was going.
He mentioned the, like, Taoism at the beginning, where there's the collective and, like, the, I lost exactly what it was, but there's, like, the individual circumstance and, like, the whole system. And it's, you have a sense of urgency from this very small vantage point, from this very small perspective.
From what's happening inside you.
Yeah. And it's
your urgency.
Yeah. It's your urgency. It's not Bitcoin's. Bitcoin does not need to scale. You may think that you need Bitcoin to scale for yourself,
yeah.
Or you may be saying that, because I care about everybody else so much, I think that Bitcoin should be able, they should all have self-custody, the ability to do it cheaply. And it's like, if If self-custody is so valuable, why are you trying to cheapen it? Why are you trying to make it less expensive? Why are you trying to make all these trade-offs to security? I think it seems more like an urgent need for you, for sure.
Absolutely. Like you're bang on. And these are things you might even be right about it. And it's not even about whether or not you're right. It's about how you're interacting with this thing. Right. And so and Bitcoin is like this too, like how I was explaining that, you know, Taoism is sort of simultaneously the study of the Tao and then what happens from studying it. It's the thing that happens to you as a result of looking at it. And Bitcoin is simultaneously this, you know, monetary technology. And it's also this thing that will change you as a result of thinking about this monetary technology. It's both at the same time.
So to get into the book itself a little bit more, so your banner on Twitter, it says that everything is connected by energy, and you've got a post that you put out on a few days ago. It's about the Tao of Bitcoin, and it's essentially the second part of that title is towards the cosmology of energy money. And you talk about energy money, and we've talked about energy and we've talked about money, but we haven't talked about how they're related yet. And so I was just curious if like, what is your perspective on Bitcoin's importance as it pertains to the fact that it is tethered to energy?
Yeah, this is basically the entire, you know, like I chose that subtitle of the book super carefully, you know, every word of it. So towards like, I'm not pretending that I have the answers on this thing. It's much more that I think it's a really fascinating intersection of a few different Bitcoin topics, and I would love to like start the conversation, if anything. And the cosmology is a term that relates to like thinking about some things, how it fits into making the universe make sense, and energy money, you know. So back to this kind of sort of core principle about Taoism, that everything is connected to this central energetic force. And the concept of the book is firstly, when you understand the problem of fiat money, the meaninglessness of fiat money, it's the infinite nature. Fiat money is infinite because it's effortless to produce. And especially now, right? It's literally like the stroke of a key.
And you can never run out of storage for a digital, you know. Yeah. It's like your cell phone when you put more files on it, doesn't get heavier. Like you can just keep creating money in the banking system, and it's just you never run out of anything.
So we've been intuiting what money is as a species for thousands of years. And you know, historically we figured out what money was based on how rare it was and how hard it was to produce, right? So gold is, you have to dig it out of the ground. And so there's an obvious relationship to between gold and energy, because it's the work that you spend digging it out of the ground. And and I saw, you know, in Madeira, Jack Mullers had a great way of saying this. He said something to the effect of like, gold is trapped in the ground, Bitcoin is trapped in time. And what I think with energy money, what it's really about is there's sort of a triangular relationship between time, money, and energy. So energy is kind of this thing that is consumed in creating money, and time is like it's like the measurement of how much energy was expended to create that amount of money. So it's like a Pythagorean theorem, where if you have two, you can figure out the other thing, right? If you know how much time it took to do something, and you know how much energy it used, you should be able to know what it's worth. And if you knew what something was worth, and you knew how much time it took you to make it, then you should be able to figure out how much energy it took to produce it. So we should have all of those three things in a money, and our money is just the one thing, right? It's like it takes no time to produce and no energy to produce. So it's just money. And Bitcoin obviously has an intimate relationship to time. We know exactly how long it takes to mine a Bitcoin. And we also know how much energy it takes to mine a Bitcoin, right? Like we can measure all this stuff. It's totally transparent. So Bitcoin is intrinsically connected to both time and energy. And beyond that, on a bigger level, right? Bitcoin is a like planetary scale technology for capturing all of the energy in the world. So it absolutely is. It's an energy monetary system that quantifies and commodifies energy.
So, all right, I think I'm tying this all together now. B- because based on what we've talked about. So you said earlier that like Bitcoin has, it's like this clock or this time that everybody has to go at the same speed as Bitcoin. You can't go faster. And so you talk about this a relationship with energy and energy and money. So it's Bitcoin is a way of helping us calibrate. We know we can, no matter how much energy we have available to us, we can only get so much value in the terms of Bitcoin as we can out of each block every 10 minutes. Okay. And so it's from there, and we kind of talked about this before we started recording, unfortunately, like how once you, the better you understand Bitcoin, the more it changes your habits and it kind of helps you just live a more productive life. So we have all this energy and we know we can only get so much value out of it every 10 minutes, based on where we're at in time. And so our job in between blocks is to be as efficient with our energy as possible in the limited amount of time we have to use it.
Right.
Yeah.
So what I think you're talking about is then sort of like the metaphysical looking at what Bitcoin is doing in terms of figuratively storing your time and energy. So our to go back to the our fiat money is only one side of the triangle. So of course it doesn't have a relationship time energy. We spend our time and our energy to earn that money. So in the fiat world, we're trading our finite time for nothing. And so in the Bitcoin world, you're trading your time for energy that's stored permanently forever on the, like, and so you're actually, our time is our most finite and precious thing. So the ability to store that permanently is like a pretty profound concept. If you think about it as your life force, like it's your life, right?
Right.
And so I think like money is, when we use money with each other, it's also an energetic exchange, and you've earned your money and you're going to give that money that you've earned to me. You're giving me your energy and you're giving it in exchange for something that I've either made or a service I'm going to give you that's required some of my own energy. It's an energy exchange, right? This is an idea that actually came from that Madex episode that we were talking about offline, because when Madex was talking about making art was physical, he's talking about expending his physical energy and his time to produce something of value and receive this energy and time in exchange for his efforts. So Bitcoin is a way that figuratively or, you know, metaphorically connects all of us energetically, because we're actually all of a sudden exchanging things of real value to us, our energy and our time, with each other. It's a fair exchange. And the reverse is true when we're exchanging fiat money. Fiat money is a system rooted in theft. So we all understand on some level that money is like a melting iceberg, and we're just trying to trade it. It's like hot potato, right? And this is why people hoard in fiat, and we cheat, lie, and steal. Like all of these things, I think, you know, and this is kind of in the book, it's like, of course the world that has evolved out of a money system where people are exchanging meaninglessness with each other has turned into the kind of world that we're living in right now, because that we're just co-creating a reality based on the rules that we've all been given of how to make sense of everything. And so if you swap that out, like this is getting back to what we were talking about earlier about some sort of like species level awakening moment. Imagine that we substitute out fiat for Bitcoin. Now we're not just getting rid of the theft, the rules of the game that inspire sort of a every man for himself, rules of the game. We're substituting that in with a system that is designed to force this energetic connection between all people and create, you know, sort of fairness and hope and all these other things we were talking about before, about why Bitcoin is magnetic as an idea. So if you imagine like, okay, so all of a sudden, if we just press pause in the world tonight and we're going to start, the entire world is using Bitcoin tomorrow and let's forget about scaling and Shinobi. It's like, what would that look like? And how would people interact with each other if all of a sudden in the back of their own minds, they weren't worried about the theft of their time? They knew their own time and their own energy was safe. So they could go out into the world and interact with everyone else, and everyone else could have that same sense of security. Like you could imagine, and then while we're doing that, we're going to be building things that are meant to endure, because we have to now create things that can be expected to be of someone else's time and energy in exchange. So now we're not going to be building refrigerators that bust after 2 years. You're going to be getting things that are meant to last, you know, like endure. And we're going to be building buildings that are the, like,
yeah.
we don't build masterpiece buildings anymore.
Right. We don't build masterpiece anythings anymore.
We don't build maybe masterpiece
software,
anymore.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that the best episodes of this podcast, High Hash Rate, are when we get a conversation
with...
I don't know what that means. The best episodes of High Hash Rate are when we get a conversation with a guest like you, who the conversation is for like hardcore Bitcoiners, right? Like less so for beginners. And I think that you have these fascinating insights. But part of your job, you're like CEO of Block Rewards, and you're talking to companies about how they can add Bitcoin savings plans and Bitcoin to the payroll and help their employees and pay benefits in Bitcoin. A lot of the audience is a lot, you know, newer to Bitcoin. That's maybe an introduction for many of them the first time. How do you balance like these conversations? Like, because I feel like there's a chance that a CEO in some board is just going to hear like some of this crazy, like to them maybe, to the normie, it sounds like crazy talk, but it's just like, ooh, it gets me just energized. Do you get any of those people in your field of work where that's like they just get it and you can just go hard with them on Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always cool when you get somebody who even understands it a little bit. And I'll say like to you guys too, I'm having a ton of fun with this because if you watch the Block Road podcast, it is meant to be really accessible for everybody.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, and if you're following it, I mean, you might not even think like I even know that much about Bitcoin, because it's meant to be about the guests, what they know, and in a way that's like I thought of the podcast originally because as I was really digging into some of these people I mentioned earlier, like Voss and Lavish and you know, all of everybody's favorites, mm-hmm. I was sharing these podcasts. Like, and I, you know, send a Foss podcast to a buddy, Finance Bro, and you get 8 minutes into it and turn it off.
Yeah.
And it's like, because Bitcoin people make content for Bitcoin people when they're really having fun with it. And that is the stuff, like you said, it sounds insane to people who mm-hmm. don't get it. And,
right.
and it's off-putting. So, but the flip side of it is probably the most rewarding part of the work that I've done with pensions and employers over the course of my career is helping people make sense of financial like strategies and products when they are really disadvantaged, because you don't learn this stuff in school. And if you didn't have like a hobby interest in it, like really not everybody is meant to be a hedge fund manager. And this is a really shitty byproduct of what's happened now. If you're not like a real estate flipper or have an Airbnb on the side, like you can't just have a job anymore. And I saw this, it was a clip on Instagram a couple weeks back, and it was talking about how the craziest thing about The Simpsons that nobody ever thinks about. I remember starting to watch Simpsons when it first came out, and it's been on forever. Like, I can't believe it's still on. But this is in 1989, and Homer was a single-income family, and he had two cars and a four-bedroom house. And like working some, I don't know, uneducated plant job, right? And so that's still what's happening on The Simpsons now, only it's like, that's insane. Nobody can
right.
do that
no,
now.
That's unaffordable.
Right. And that's only 30 years. And I don't remember how we got talking about The Simpsons, but So I get a ton of pleasure out of creating content for people, like entry-level financial type education content, because it's really sad when you see the stuff people like, life is hard enough without having to figure out all this stuff too, just so that you can actually have some hope for the future.
Hell yeah. The other question I guess that I should have asked a little bit more clearly in my last one was, are you able to communicate some of these benefits of like the relationship that people have with each other, with their economy, with like their community, that they get from Bitcoin Are you able to communicate like how that could, you could condense that benefit into like making their companies better, like making their companies more efficient, like making their operations more efficient? If you have people who are, you're kind of giving them this technology that tunes them to be more productive and more efficient with their time and energy.
Yeah. You know, I it's an interesting question. I think it's going to get, you know, accelerating. It's going to get more and more simple to do that as more people understand what Bitcoin does. And like you guys did this, there's these pizza commercials going around right now. I was watching a Laker game the other day and they ran Coinbase's pizza commercial. And like, I was half doing something else because the commercial was on and I heard this like Bitcoin a few times. And then I watched a commercial. I'm like, I can't believe how direct some of the advertisements are getting as a result of what's happening with the ETFs, like normalizing it. So I think we're not that far away from, like, as people are getting hit with these like really point blank, and the punchline on that commercial is something like, it's the best form of money ever, or it's money improved, or it's the next stage of money. And subtle things like that, I think, are going to, if things like that are TV, then you can talk about it to people who don't get it in a different way, with a different kind of, you know, directness and conviction. And I think as that happens more, like this idea about trading your time and energy, it totally makes sense to me that everybody is going to earn some Bitcoin in the near future, because already, like as you mentioned, right, things, it doesn't work now already. It's just that we haven't arrived at the moment in time where enough people kind of understand that there's something else you can do instead.
And you made me think, there are more, like the Bitcoin advertising is ramping up. I am seeing a lot more Bitcoin ads, Bitcoin only ads. Well, I mean, maybe that's probably because I work, you know, for a Bitcoin-only company, but I mean, maybe I just think it's just, there's so much of it more coming. I don't even, does this feel like the end of the wave, or is this like one giant wave that's behind us here? What do you think?
I think it's going to get, like, it's a positive feedback loop that goes to infinity. So the more bullish you can get with it, the more bullish you can get with it. And eventually, we're going to be able to have a conversation like this on a pod, and like 80% of normal people could just flip through YouTube and watch for 10 minutes and get it. Be like, yeah, hey, of course, gold right. Stuck in the ground, Bitcoin's time. Yep. Like, I don't know how far away that is, but it's an idea that anybody can understand. It's just super foreign, and people are also being gaslit to think that it's way riskier than it is, mm-hmm. because for obvious reasons, right?
For sure. Yeah, it's almost like
the profundity of the idea is just so, you know, it's so hard to grasp it. You know, it's like we talk about this all the time. Like, how do you sell? We talked about it last episode. How do you sell something to someone that requires so much time to get? How do you sell it to them in like 30 seconds? It's frivolous, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like he said, like Taoism is little things that get you to start thinking about something in a different way or in a deeper way. And I think that that's all you can do, right? Is like, you can just kind of have that impact on somebody and however much amount of time you have with them to get them to think about something and get them to think about the idea of Bitcoin just a little bit more deeply. And I think the better you're situated in life and the more value you're creating and the more, the better the example you're setting by what you're doing, the more impact you're going to have and the more likely they're going to think about it a little bit more deeply, because they're going to wonder, how can I benefit from it?
Totally.
People should definitely, you know, be thinking more about this trifecta you explained. This is something that never occurred to, you know, it doesn't occur to most of us, you know, about the money, energy, time connection, you know?
Yeah. So, that's my favorite part of the book, is an explanation around why I think that relates back to this kind of like core idea of, you know, Bitcoin is like this, yeah, eternal energy system. Like we're at the start of, like, I think it's so much bigger. This is kind of where I go with the book. When I talk about the idea of a cosmology of energy money, it's not to me that we're going towards hyper-Bitcoinization, which is a world where Bitcoin is the only form of money. It's like that's the start. So what happens after that? And that's when we're really thinking about something that is like, you know, where does this thing fit in and how the universe works? It's like, this is a thing that if everyone was thinking about it and changing the way they acted as a result, it's actually going to fundamentally change probably everything about everything. It's going to be,
right,
if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, it's a new way of thinking about the way we transact. Yeah.
We first got into the topic of DAO. It made me think of like almost like a Twitter joke, but it's not exactly a joke. I think there's some insight into it, but it's like, some people argue, is Bitcoin just another financial cult or just another scheme, right? Or maybe it's something bigger. Like we had Rigel on, who talks about the importance of the religious aspects of Bitcoin. So I was like, got me thinking, like, what's the difference between a cult and a religion? Well, it's just like crypto and Bitcoin, right? Like one's decentralized. If it's decentralized, it's not a cult. It's a religion. It is a way of thinking
or
about
the world.
Or if it
is decentralized,
world.
Right?
It is, yeah. If it is decentralized, yeah. It's a religion. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
Can I point out something that you made me think about as well that we've also spoken about? Is that Taoism is this individual, you know, relationship with, you know, yourself, and you become more Taoist as it, you know, as you practice more, and you know, it benefits your own person. You might say that about other religions, but Taoism, what it sounds like, is very focused on the internal process. And I think that sort of the same aligns with, you know, once you start aligning more and more with Bitcoin, that's a hyper-Bitcoinization within. You know, it doesn't happen from above. It's like it's an internal process. You may have already mentioned this, but
yeah, no. You're bang on, dude. It's like 100%. And this is the thing that I think, like, that also doesn't have an endpoint. So I think like people who are already totally orange filled, we're not at the end of our own journey. Like if you look at people, like I'm a big Jeff Booth guy. Jeff is still having new ahas about Bitcoin all the time. Like people aren't done. We're still going somewhere where no one knows where we're going. And yeah, man. So personal hyper Bitcoinization, and then that just happening for more and more people. Like I think it's a mind virus it's like the most contagious idea ever. It's just that I think also we have this insanely dopamine depleted attention span compressed society. So we think that because something is taking more than 15 seconds, it might not be happening. But like this is a 15-year-old idea, man. Like it's moving at warp speed if you think about the other human ideas. I remember when email was created, man, it wasn't like the next day everyone was like, oh, we're using email now, don't send me a letter. Like these things take a long time.
Yeah. And Mike, just to reiterate, to get the values out of like Taoism or any religion, just like Bitcoin, you got to use it. You got to practice. That's what we talked about. It's like practicing. Yeah.
But it took you 20 years to get where you are. You know, that's what my first point is about.
And in 20 years, it'll be 20 years further too. Like you said, there's no end. Nope.
Yeah. And Bitcoiners too, man. Like this is where I think like, okay, we're also sort of measuring what's going on in Bitcoin by how we're thinking about it now. And the oldest Bitcoiners are 15 years old. Like, so what happens when we have like adult Bitcoiners, 30-year-old Bitcoiners, 40-year-old Bitcoiners, and, what will we be thinking about then? It's like, so back to that idea of like the urgency of Bitcoin needs to do X now. Like we have no idea what Bitcoin needs to do. And if you think of it as this sort of like, it can make the comparison. It's like Bitcoin is like a process. It's a thing that's unfolding on its own. And individual people might be able to do something to influence that unfolding in some way, but probably, like, if you zoom out on a big time scale, there isn't any one individual that's going to do anything to change Bitcoin at all. It's just going to do whatever it's going to do. And that has to do with price. Like, there's nothing, like, same thing about, like, why people might obsessively want to know what the Bitcoin price is more than once a day. It's like, nobody needs to know. Like, you and I, it doesn't matter if the Bitcoin price has changed during this conversation, is relevant for us, because none of us are going to get off the call and do something about the price of Bitcoin, right? So why do we constantly need to know? Why?
Price of Bitcoin does not, and it, the more you know about Bitcoin, the more you realize the price of Bitcoin does not accurately reflect the value of Bitcoin ever. It's always undervalued. So it's like if you're looking at the price obsessively, you just don't get it.
Well said.
Yeah.
But in spite of that, there are people who know tons about Bitcoin that will happily donate an hour and a half of their day every day, doom scrolling Twitter and tweeting about price every day. Like lots of people follow HODL and Kruger, like these, like, you know, price people. It's like it's a subject of, of mental space.
That's true. That's a good point. And it's crazy because it's, you know, the bull market is, it seems like we're ramping up into it. And it's a little disappointing because that is what dominates the conversation. That's what dominates the narrative during the bull market is the price. And that's some people talk about Nostr and it hasn't been as popular as they'd hope. But if you ever go and check out Nostr, there's just a lot more signal there. There's a lot less price. So sometimes it's nice to retreat to those areas that's of people who've been practicing a little bit more long or a bit longer term, who are just a little bit more invested, that you can kind of keep focusing on the more interesting aspects other than price.
Yeah. I'm with Safe, you know, like I think number go up technology is a critical tool for recruitment.
For sure.
I don't participate in it, but I get it. Whatever needs to happen to get people excited.
For sure. Well, Before we wrap up, I mean, you've got this book coming out and this is already released. Where can we find it, first of all? And then you've also got another book if you want to talk about your other book.
Sure. The book's on Amazon right now. It's just a print version. Maybe by the time you guys release this, there's going to be an audiobook and a Kindle version too.
You're going to have Guy Swan reading this one, Bitcoin Audible?
You know, I just made a joke about that because Jesse was on my pod a week back and Guy Swan read Magic Internet Money. I don't have a relationship with Guy, so actually who's reading my book is a guy that I found on Fiverr who seems to be
nice.
A very, very cool fellow. Fiverr is really something interesting, man, and you can get anything on there. So I wrote another book 2 years ago called Bitcoin for Financial Advisors, which probably should be called Bitcoin for Financial Advisors in Canada just because there's a little bit of Canadian content. But that's
the
a much
Canadian
smaller
version.
That's right, the Canadian version. The U.S. version, if anyone wants to help me write it, I actually would love to swap out for that. It's really just most of my financial, my professional circle are finance bros. So I had so many Bitcoin conversations that went really badly. Like, you know, I think a lot of people when they're in the early stages of Orange Pill and they're talking about it all the time to everyone and they think that everyone's going to get it right away. And then nobody does, and they actually just stop inviting you to dinner parties. So I kind of went through that, and at a certain point, I'm like, the book took me like a week to write because I just had basically the same conversation hundreds of times. All of the, you know, sort of meant to be kind of like, what are the basic things somebody who gives financial advice for a recommendation might need to know to have an actual, you know, informed idea about what Bitcoin is and why somebody would want to own it. So that one's on Amazon as well. Block Reward Podcast. You mentioned we're on there. That's something I have a lot of fun with. Like I said, it's more sort of a beginner pod.
But it's good. Yeah, it's very accessible. And I think you guys still cover like really good, interesting topics, like deep topics as well. Why one last question is, how many financial advisors do you think, once they start to understand Bitcoin a little bit, are like, oh shit, this is going to put me out of business, not recommending this?
Good question. I think that's probably pretty far away, because
I agree.
it's like that quote about, like, you know, a man can never learn something that he has he'd be better off not learning whatever.
Yeah.
You completely slaughtered.
Totally know that one.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. So I think that, like, there's firstly going to be just a massive hardcore denial. It's like realtors thinking that the price of real estate is going to go up forever. You talk to a realtor about what Bitcoin's going to do to real estate, and they look at you like you have a second head growing out of the side of your neck. So yeah, I think it'll be kind of the same thing. What I think will happen is they're going to have to start recommending it, even begrudgingly. Like, you're going to start getting fired if you don't have a 3% or a 5% or a 7%. And then it's just going to continue to outperform and be a growing percentage of everyone's portfolio. And it's inevitable. Like, the everything bubble is going to have to pop, and it's going to pop into Bitcoin. So when that does, that part might be swift. And I think a lot of those people are just going to be looking for new careers.
Scary day, man. It sounds like a scary day.
I think it is kind of, well, for financial advisors. Yeah. Jack. I think it's kind of far in the future. I think, yeah, the volatility is just going to keep it at arm's length for a lot of people for a while. But you talk about the real estate agents. I was thinking about this the other day, listening to Peter Schiff talk about gold, and he was just defending it tooth and nail. He would just not give any ground that Bitcoin had any value. And I when you listen to Peter Schiff, and think of him as like a greasy like lawyer who's like gold's lawyer, and he's in court and he's never ever 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 going to give you any ground. He's going to fight the case for gold. I think there's just a lot of people out there like that in real estate and gold. It's like they're the lawyer. They're going to defend it all the way to the end.
Love to know how much of his, like, how much of that is a persona, or if he's actually just like that and he's managing money for people. I feel bad for those people. Honestly, yeah. It's like not even because of his opinions about Bitcoin, but because of how hard-headed that guy would be if he's really like that in real life. Man,
how could he not be though? I mean, that's quite an act to put on for like.
No,
like,
yeah, I was gonna say I listened to a few recently. I used to think he was just
doing
it.
How could he be that dumb? And I mean, it's not that hard to get, right? Like Bitcoin, I get it. It's a weird idea, and like, but for him specifically, because he gets absolutely blitzkrieged by Bitcoiners all the time. It's not like he's on the fringe and he hasn't been exposed to the good arguments. Like, people just lambaste him with like any, you know. So yeah,
earlier, you know, it's like that energy you're putting out there, and that, like, if it's antagonistic or if it's peaceful or what, you're going to get it back. So it's like, people aren't just lambasting Peter on Twitter all day because he's this poor guy who just thinks gold's better and minds his own business otherwise. No, he's out there. He is asking for it. He's smacking the bees hive, and he wants to punch some bees is what he wants to do.
Yeah. Haha, losers. Bitcoin just dropped to 66,000. Yeah. Next stop, zero.
He's a troll, for sure.
He did Peter Zahan's dinner party. Like,
For sure.
Yeah, this has been lots of fun, fellas. Thanks for having me on.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, we'll put all your contact stuff in the show notes, but definitely check out Block Rewards Podcast. Definitely, it's a great one, especially to send to friends and family who are looking for introductions. Better than Pomp. Don't send them Pomp. Send them Block Rewards.
Yeah, we're talking about you, Pop. You.
Awesome, man. Well, it was great talking to you.
Cool, yeah.
We'll have to have you on again and go deeper on some other topics.
We'll get you on the Block Reward, too.
Perfect, yeah.
Sounds good. All right, I'll cut it. Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate Podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked 80 IQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com. Or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!